This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting. Put them hands up.
We're about to get into it, and I'm in a good mood. This should be a good one, guys. True. Was the therapy you needed today? You needed a little bit of Crown and the MOB. Love my people. Shout out to Crown and MOB for allowing me to use their music and not pay a damn thing. So I appreciate that. And welcome back to what is hopefully one of your favorite, if not your favorite, podcasts here on the Yak Network. This is your Drunk Uncle Sports Podcast, and I am your host, your Drunk Uncle, Anwar Richardson. And listen, I know there's going to be a lot of people listening to this for the first time, and there's going to be some people who have just been new to it, and I haven't explained it in a while. People, you're going to ask, well, why is it called your Drunk Uncle Sports Podcast? Well, because when you just think about your drunk uncle is the guy that comes to the party. He's silly. He's making the jokes. He's a guy that everybody is kind of the center of attention. And then every once in a while, your drunk uncle drops some knowledge on you that you're going to say, man, my drunk uncle actually knows something. So that's why I'm your drunk uncle. And that's why I chose the name of the Drunk Uncle Sports Podcast the name of the show, which we've been doing over 100 of these. So that's been for the past like couple of years. So thank you. If it's your first time listening to the show, whether you like me or you don't like me, I still appreciate you listening. If you've been a longtime listener, I definitely appreciate you listening. You have a lot of options. Like I always say this, but you have a lot of options. I mean, you've got, especially as some of you are quarantining, right? I mean, you've got every podcast out there that's available. Everybody and their mama got a podcast, right? Their mama's mama's got a podcast, right? Kids got podcast. Everybody got a podcast. You got Netflix, you got Amazon Prime, you got Hulu. You've got, for some of us who still got cable and they're still paying that ridiculous price, you still got cable. So many different options out there. And the fact that you're choosing to spend your time and listen to my podcast, I definitely appreciate it. And I say I want to thank you. I hope everybody's been doing well. This is going to be a fantastic podcast. I have got some stuff that is special that is planned for you in just a few minutes. I hope everyone's been staying safe. You know, we're starting to open back up a little bit and we're starting to get out a little bit. So I hope everyone's kind of enjoying themselves. I got a chance to go out. I was trying to think, okay, what can I do that, you know, gives me some outdoor activity, but you can still feel safe doing it, right? So rented a boat over the weekend. You know, me and the old lady went out on the boat and had a fantastic time. But, you know, it was kind of weird when, you know, it's been a while since I've been in, like, close proximity. Like, you go to your HEB, you don't really have, like, close proximity outside of, like, you know, you're trying to get, you know, some spaghetti sauce and someone's just standing there. And then, or that person, like, you're trying to grab something, they come over you. And you're just like, yo, my man, 6 feet, right? 6 feet, right? You know, move back. Outside of that. But when I went to rent this boat, I mean, it was, if you've rented a boat, I mean, it's a small little office. It ain't a big office. And there was no social distancing. There was no safe anything. I mean, they're just handing you pens that have just been sitting there. I take my own pen because I've always been a germaphobe. They're handing you pens. They're in close proximity. Old dudes in your face. You're just like, all right, man, if it's going down, it's going down. Like, there's nothing I can do to prevent it. But Drunk Uncle Still Living. Had a fantastic time out there off of Lake Travis. You know, made some food, had some drinks, and it was just kind of fun to get out and have something normal. And I hope you guys are doing the same, and I hope you guys are enjoying yourself. Now, let's get into what's really going to be cool, because hey, you guys know, like, I've been wanting to do different things this year, and I have been switching it up, and I've switched up the flow, and I think everyone's been liking it. You guys gave me great suggestions on different things to do. So let's get into, without further ado, let's get into the crux of the show, and let's get into why you came here. You know, obviously, it's May 11th at this point, and it means nothing to anybody, but if you're a Texas fan or an OU fan, it still means something. Because Texas fans don't like OU fans. OU fans don't like Texas fans. We can talk about this rivalry all the time. And here's the most interesting, I think, fascinating part of the Texas-OU rivalry is that oftentimes it spills over to reporters. Oftentimes you actually see, like, reporters who are actually going at each other on Twitter and going after each other, don't talk to each other at the Red River game. It's like, it's craziness. But there's a guy who covers OU for The Athletic. And I'll be honest, I've been a fan of his work for a while. I think he's a tremendously hard worker. I like his original reporting. He's a guy that I've been wanting to talk to for a little bit of time, and I'm finally just trying to figure out when's a good time. And he wrote something on Monday talking about the quarterback situation, and I thought he took a fantastic approach because clearly he can't talk to the quarterbacks. So he went out and did the next best thing, which is he talked to their trainers. It was able to nail that interview. I thought it was a fantastic read. And I just thought now would be a perfect time to sit down and talk to Jason Kersey from The Athletic because, again, huge fan of his work. I think he's a hard worker out there, and I think he's one of the best writers in the country. Jason, I do appreciate you sitting down and talking with me, risking your reputation a little bit by doing this. But nonetheless, I do appreciate you being willing to get your car egged at some point tomorrow morning.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, man. I'm a fan of yours as well. And that was a very kind introduction that I certainly did not deserve, but I'll take it.
No, you know, listen, the one thing I pride myself on is my intros. Like, I want to be the hype man. Like, I want to be your Diddy. I want to be your Diddy of the podcast. And I'm just coming out and I'm just shaking it. And you're just Biggie Smalls and having a good time.
Well, I hope I don't disappoint anyone. Do you ever hear Jerry Seinfeld had a thing where some other comedian was opening for him and introduced him as the greatest comedian alive, Jerry Seinfeld. And apparently Jerry went and like tore that guy apart after the show because he said, don't ever set me up like that and put those kind of expectations on me. I don't feel quite the same way. That's just what that reminded me of.
And by the way,
I hope I don't disappoint anyone.
By the way, you are a huge Seinfeld fan, right?
I am.
I mean, this day, I mean, we talked a little bit before, but this day is kind of like a tough one for you in some ways, isn't it?
Well, because, yeah, Jerry Stiller, obviously people know him for a million things from going back to the 60s. But for me, he's Frank Costanza. It's my favorite character on Seinfeld. Any scene he was in, he just dominated and I absolutely loved. And I mean, I don't know if people will be able to see this, but you can see my Frank Costanza figurine back here in my office. I didn't just put that up for today. That's up all the time. So, it's sad news, but a lot of laughs today as I've gone back and watched old clips and stuff.
Okay, so which one ends up being the favorite for you? Is it the take on his Christmas one?
Festivus?
Yes. The best one for you, Festivus for the rest of us?
Oh, yeah, that's number one. That's number one. Unbelievable. Like, that episode is my favorite Seinfeld episode. I love it so much. There's just something so just insanely absurd about the whole thing that it makes me laugh. I can watch that. I've probably watched that episode 100 times, and I've never not laughed at it. Like that.
Have you celebrated Festivus? My question
we
to you.
Did.
Have you celebrated it?
Well, last year at the Peach Bowl, pardon me and the other OU beat writers – actually did. We went to the Home Depot in Atlanta. We got an aluminum pole and we set it up in the media hospitality room and we aired our grievances and did arm wrestling for feats of strength. It was so much fun. Yeah, we did that just a few months ago. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Pictures already didn't exist, right? I mean, like this is.
Oh, it's on there. Your fellow rivals guy, Eddie Radosovich, tweeted out the picture today. So
let's go look. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Eddie kind of falls a little bit into the whole Texas OU rivalry.
So I know. Oh, I believe me, I know.
Not quite sure. He's never taken a real shot at me, but he's not a – him and Ketch have had their war of words. So yeah. I try to stay out of that. I've only every once in a while just to troll an OU fan. I'll make this in minutes, and I want to get into the sports topics. I will admit this to you, though, Jason. I don't really do a lot of trolling. I just kind of do my thing. But a few weeks ago, I, on a like Sunday night, watched Tiger King. And
oh boy.
And I did a Tiger King / OU reference. And I did it. It was the only time I ever I did something on purpose. and OU fans pretty much hated me.
Because I think I remember that because it was yes, he lived in Oklahoma, but he also was wearing a Texas hat throughout the whole thing. So it was like that became the back and forth.
It was. And I was still like, well, you know, but he was. It was all in fun for me.
Anybody who gets mad about stuff like that is just looking for a reason to be mad. It's fun. And by the way, I have to tell you, you know, I went to that park 7 or 8 years ago. I've known about Joe Exotic forever. Like people That's in great. Oklahoma, I've described it as like when an indie band goes mainstream and everybody's like, I knew him first. Mm-hmm. Everyone in Oklahoma was like that with Joe Exotic. We've known about that crazy man for 10 years. Now he's world famous. So he went to that park.
It's all relative because he is in prison. But he does have a guy. I mean, he's got a movie coming out. And so that helps. You know, what's funny is I lived in Tampa for years and I've actually been to Big Cat Rescue.
What?
I've actually.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Did you meet Carol Baskin?
Yeah. So years ago, when I was like, you know, a reporter stringer coming up and this and that. And you know, like back then, you're taking any assignments that you can get from a newspaper, right? So you're taking news, you're taking sports, it doesn't matter. And I had to do a story on Big Cat Rescue that went into like the local edition. You can't find it nowadays because Tampa Tribune doesn't exist. But I did interview her. Like I was like, holy crap. And I was like, oh my God, my life was in jeopardy. But there's only one thing. There's only one thing about that story that no one who's not from Tampa will know or appreciate. We'll talk sports in a second. Is that when they said that Carol was walking down Nebraska Avenue and that's where she met her first husband who kind of pulled her over and was kind of persistent and wanted to talk to her because she was all upset and this and that. Nebraska Avenue is the famous street in Tampa known for its hookers.
No.
That is Nebraska Avenue. And I've seen people in Tampa put out memes of like people spitting out water when Carol Baskin says she was just walking because, you know, to walk off some steam.
Oh, my God.
That is the famous hooker alley. I do not believe. I'm probably going to get sued. I do not believe that Carol was just walking. And now it would make sense why he kept driving around and driving around. And
that's right.
There you go.
So real quick, I know we got to talk about sports or people are going to turn it off. But did she kill her husband? I think she did.
I don't know if we're allowed to say.
Well, I'm saying it. I think she probably did.
Isn't she like suing everyone associated with that project?
I don't know. I don't think she can sue us. If she does, I was just kidding. Sorry.
I will just say the evidence didn't look good, even though my saying is always you don't have to admit something for it to be true. Yeah. Because if that was the case, everybody would just say not guilty and never go to jail. So I don't know. All right.
No.
Let's move on. We've given BS all day.
Yes.
You had a fascinating article, I thought, when you started talking about the quarterback situation there at Oklahoma. You talked about Spencer Rattler. You got Tanner. Is it Mordecai? Am I saying his last name? Mordecai. And you got the incoming freshman with Chandler Morris. But you had a chance to talk to their quarterback trainers, Kevin Murray. You can talk about the two guys that he trains. And then Mike, I don't know how to say his last name. Is it Giovanato?
Giovando.
Giovando. Yeah. Totally butchered his name. I apologize for that. Tell me what you were able to learn. Tell me what you were able to ascertain as to what these guys are doing to stay fresh in a real key transition year for Oklahoma at the quarterback position.
Yeah, you know, this is a story I thought about because, like you said earlier, you know, it's not like any of us are allowed to talk to the quarterbacks or, you know, any access is being given to any of that. So I just tried to think of a creative way to write about the quarterbacks because obviously everyone cares about the quarterbacks at every school, but especially at a place that, you know, has four Heisman winning quarterbacks in the last two decades. So two of them in the last, you know, 3 years. So I reached out, you know, Kevin Murray and I have gotten to know each other a little bit through, you know, Kyler being at OU. And then last year, Tanner Mordecai, I wrote about him a little bit. So I've gotten to know him. And then I went out and visited Spencer Rattler when he was still in high school in Phoenix and got to know his trainer as well. So I figured it'd be just good to check in with them and see if they'd be willing to talk. And they both were. I'm just very interested because OU has this open quarterback spot. We all assume it's going to be Spencer Rattler. In fact, I vowed to my readers that I would never use the phrase quarterback battle because I'm so sure it's going to be Spencer Rattler. Because I'm, frankly, and I'm sure you get this too with Tom Herman and with Charlie Strong before that and everybody, you know, it's an open competition, even when you know that it's not. And it's that way. It was that way with Baker Mayfield in 2015. We all knew he was going to win the job. Kyler Murray was never going to lose that job to Austin Kendall. Jalen Hurts was never going to not win that job last year after he transferred in. But this is what Riley does. He makes guys earn it. He waits until a few weeks before the season to make it official. So technically there is still a competition going on. And I wanted to know, what do you do when you're in a quarterback competition and you lose the entire spring? I mean, they had one spring practice before everything got shut down. I don't know. How many did Texas have? Did they get any in?
None. They got none.
None. Okay. Yeah. OU got one in before everything canceled. In fact, that was a crazy day because when everything got canceled, it was OU's pro day. We all went down there and covered the pro day. And then that night is when right here in Oklahoma City, the Thunder game got shut down because of Rudy Gobert and everything. But anyway, so I wondered about how do you prepare to be a starting quarterback or to compete for that job when you miss 14 opportunities. You know, every one of those practices is an opportunity for those guys. And the spring can be very important, especially for the underdog like Tanner Mordecai, who maybe losing 14 practices means there's 14 less chances he had to prove that he could step in. And the quarterback job too is interesting because, Tanner Mordecai spent all of last year as Jalen Hurts' backup, but in the Peach Bowl, when Lincoln Riley pulled Jalen Hurts out of the game in the fourth quarter, he didn't put Tanner Mordecai in, he put Spencer Rattler in. And I always, you know, he said that wasn't a sign of anything.
Well, that's a backup. The backups used to go in.
Yeah. And so, so I just found it very interesting. And, it's interesting because, out in Phoenix, Spencer Rattler's been in the program for a year. So he knows what he needs to work on. His private trainer knows Lincoln Riley and knows the system. He's also training, guys from Ohio State, guy from Cal, guy from Purdue. He's got a bunch of guys, those Arizona QBs all kind of get together. And then Kevin Murray is obviously extremely familiar with Lincoln Riley's offense because his son played in it. And he trains Mordecai, he trains Chandler Morris. So it was really interesting to sort of get a peek inside what they're doing to stay fresh and to keep this competition ongoing.
So what did you see? Like, obviously they're working out. Spencer, I thought you mentioned something that he was at one point throwing to some NFL guys during his training. Obviously, Mordecai, I mean, he can't be trained by anyone better than a guy who's produced a Heisman Trophy winner. So what kind of things that you learned that they've been kind of working on?
Yeah, it's Spencer Rattler. There's a couple of NFL guys, Jamal Williams from the Packers, Ronald Jones from Tampa Bay, are both out there working with their coach, their private coach in Arizona, who happens to be friends with Rattler's private coach. So they're out there catching balls, which obviously is a great thing for Spencer Rattler. Tanner Mordecai is actually in Norman most of the time, but Chandler Morris is down there. He goes in and works out with Kevin usually right after Kyler gets done, because Kyler's back in Dallas too, working out too. So he's got that as a little bit of a little bit of help there for him. They work on the route concepts that they need to work on because they know the system so well. They're not really doing much film study because it's hard to do that and social distance. You can sort of do that out on a field. You can't really do that so much, inside a room, inside a film room. It's a little bit harder to do. So they're not doing as much of that kind of stuff. But 3-4 days a week for Rattler, he's out there working with him. And And it's very interesting because this is a time when these guys would normally be able to organize private workouts with receivers and, sure, and sort of establish themselves as the leader, and you know, get guys on the team sort of maybe behind them in a way, wanting to work out with them, those sorts of things. They can't do any of that stuff. Mordecai's done it a little bit because he's been in Norman, but for Rattler being all the way in Phoenix, that's really hard to do. So it's just a weird time, but it's also good for them, I think, in some ways, because it allows them to totally focus on themselves. That's what I thought was interesting. Both Kevin Murray and Mike Giovando said is that this really gives them a chance to not worry about what the other guy is doing. They can totally focus on what they need to do to get better. And so obviously you wanted those 14 practices and they would prefer to have them, I'm sure. But being able to sort of block out the noise and think about yourself and not have to look over and, oh my God, Spencer Rattler just made a big throw, now I have to do the same thing, or vice versa. I think that's helpful in some ways to both those guys.
Is there a downfall here? I mean, when you're talking about, okay, 14 practices are missed, you're talking about not only the spring, you're talking about the summer workouts. Essentially, if all goes well, I mean, maybe they get dropped in mid-June, but can you really have a quarterback competition when you don't have that much time before the season? You really need to start getting focused. And again, you know, mid-June is kind of optimal at this point. So is there a downfall, you know, for either one, or is one more affected than the other, in your opinion?
Yeah, I sort of feel like Mordecai is affected more just because he was the underdog. No matter what anybody at OU says, Mordecai is the underdog here. Spencer Rattler was the number one quarterback in the 2019 class nationally, consensus number one quarterback. He's a five-star kid, you know, probably the most physically talented quarterback OU has signed in 15 years, maybe. Yeah, out of high school anyway, because Kyler Murray wasn't out of high school. He went to Texas A&M, as you know. So so he's such so physically gifted that, you know, he would really have to either screw it up, or Mordecai would have to be unbelievably good, I think, for things to go opposite. But this was a chance for Mordecai, was to have a good spring. And if Rattler maybe didn't have as good a spring, then that makes it interesting going into the summer. Well, that's all gone. Lincoln Riley doesn't have that chance to see both of those guys there for those 14 practices. So I think it hurts Mordecai more, because once you come back, you're right, it's going to be a sprint to get to the season. They're going to have to accelerate the strength coaches. And this is the same way everywhere. The strength coaches are going to have to get everybody ready to play. They're going to have their practices, and they're going to have to get ready for a game. And it could be a very quick turnaround. And if it's a very quick turnaround, you would think that sort of favors the favorite, I guess, in this case.
Sure. So even though Spencer, let's assume he's a starter, right? And he ends up being the guy. At the end of the day, even though he missed spring and he's missed summer, I mean, Lincoln Riley has been a wizard. I mean, clearly, you know, one quarterback after another, not only as a coach, but as a coordinator. So at the end of the day, does it even make a difference if a guy like Spencer Rattler misses time because Lincoln Riley has just proven to be that good when it comes to quarterbacks?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point, because you know, he didn't have a ton of time with Jalen Hurts, and even though I don't think Jalen Hurts was as good as his numbers indicated last year, and I've been on the record about that, mm-hmm, I think Lincoln Riley is such a genius that he put Jalen Hurts in a lot of really good positions. I'll be honest with you, I couldn't believe he went in the second round. I just don't get it. I honestly don't get it. I think there were a lot of moments last year where the offense wasn't nearly as effective as it was the year before because of Jalen Hurts' tendency to run with the ball, to take carries from the running backs. His passes sometimes were really off. Sometimes he was a little bit of a turnover machine at times. I mean,
That Texas game was a prime example of that.
Right. I mean, he had that one moment everybody talks about where he went behind his back. That was really careless. He's lucky that that worked out. So Lincoln Riley made Jalen Hurts look really good in a year, but Jalen Hurts still had the spring. And so I wonder how that's going to be different. I mean, Rattler has already been in the system for a year though, at least. So he knows what he's supposed to do. I think that may help. And you're right. Lincoln is an extremely good quarterback coach. You can't argue with the results. So I think that Rattler will be fine. You just wonder, I mean, early in this OU's schedule early is pretty tough. I mean, they start with Missouri State. Who cares? The only interesting thing about that is Bobby Petrino is the coach. But after that, I mean, they play at Army, a team that almost beat them 2 years ago in Norman. They play Tennessee, which, certainly isn't Peyton Manning, T. Martin, Tennessee, but it's still, you know, their talent has gotten a lot better, and they're going to be a tough team to play in Norman. And then before you know it, they have Baylor and Texas. I mean, the first five or six games are pretty tough for them. So I think this could really be a tough learning curve for whoever ends up winning the job, probably Spencer Rattler, even though Lincoln Riley's so good, just because they just don't have the time.
I mean, it's also got to help, though. I mean, you got Creed Humphrey. He's a guy that – entertained the potential of coming out and decided to come back. OU's got Charleston Rambo, and doesn't seem like OU has any problems plugging and playing receivers every single year, whether it was CD Lamb or Hollywood, you know, before them. A hell of a kicker. I mean, he's pretty damn solid, you know, and of course there's Kennedy Brooks. Like, it still seems like from an offensive standpoint, there still are, I mean, it's like, the reloading that OU does, like there's still plenty of weapons to work with within that offense.
Yeah, there are. I mean, you're right. I mean, they return, I think, 5-6 offensive linemen who have career starts, 4 full-time starters up front or backs, leading obviously with Creed Humphrey. They've got Kennedy Brooks, like you said, is a 2-time 1,000-yard rusher. They do lose Trey Sermon, who transferred to Ohio State. That's been a really sort of weird thing. How he sort of disappeared last year in that Texas game, actually, is when he really disappeared. He had no carries. It was the first time in 2 years he had no carries. And anyway, so he's gone, but obviously they still have Kennedy Brooks, got that offensive line that will probably get better. They were pretty young last year. And Charleston Rambo, they have 3 guys who were 5-star receivers in high school that are all back. Trajan Bridges, Jaden Hazelwood, and Theo Weiss are all back. As well, obviously losing CD Lamb isn't going to be easy, and Lee Morris was such a reliable target for them for a while, but they really, and they lose Grant Calcaterra because of concussions, but they do have a pretty good firepower on offense. I think the running back position is a little bit of a concern behind Kennedy Brooks, just because you lose Trey Sermon and you also don't have Ramondre Stevenson for the first 5 games because of the suspension. In December, the marijuana test failure suspension, NCAA. So Ramondre Stevenson won't be there when they play Texas. I think that's the last game of his suspension will be Texas. So running back position is a little bit of a concern, but it's just hard, even with a lot of unknowns at quarterback, it's hard to be worried about that position for OU because Lincoln has done such a good job. They've never had any sort of dips in production at quarterback the way that they did when Josh Heupel was there. There have not been any of those years where they've just been terrible. Not even terrible, just below average at quarterback. Mm-hmm. They've had such productive quarterback play that's one position it's hard to worry about, even if you don't know who's going to start.
Sure. So, okay, so let's take a big picture perspective, and I want to get your outside view. And again, I think Lincoln Riley's a fantastic, phenomenal coach, fantastic quarterback coach. And that being said, in the question of Sam Ehlinger versus Spencer Rattler, who do you think has the edge this season?
Ooh, that's kind of tough, because if you base it purely on just projections, I think maybe Spencer Rattler, just because of what OU's done at quarterback. But Sam Ehlinger has you know, all these years of starting experience under his belt. He's been successful. He is, I think, everybody in Norman, Oklahoma's favorite person to make fun of because of the we're back thing. But he's a really good quarterback. And I think it's hard to look across the Big 12 and not, if you're filling out an all Big 12 preseason ballot, and not put Sam Ehlinger at the top. If you put Spencer Rattler there, I think you can maybe justify that, but it's also sort of hard, especially because by the time we vote, he's not even going to have been named the starter yet, even though we all know he's going to be the starter. So if I, you know, when I fill out that ballot, I'll probably put Sam Ehlinger on there just because I don't really know who else it would be. I think Spencer Sanders at Oklahoma State is going to be pretty good with all the weapons he's got back. But I think at the, as the season begins, I think you give it Sam Ehlinger. Now, if you're projecting out, you know, all these Heisman odds that have come out have Spencer Rattler right up there, probably about even with, or maybe even a little bit above Ehlinger just because of the recent history. But yeah, I just think that's a tough one. Ehlinger is a really interesting guy to me. I think he's a really good player. I just don't know if he's a great player. You know, I just don't know that yet.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen it at times. You've seen greatness at times. The LSU game 2 years ago, the Kyler Murray game, and OU. But then, you know, there's he also struggled because he also had the rib injury last year. But I was curious of something before I go back to Sam. And your number two guy, would it be Brock Purdy or would it actually be Spencer Rattler?
Whew. Yeah, that's where it's tough. I mean, again, basing it on the same sort of criteria, I don't know how you don't put Purdy there. It's just so hard. Those preseason ballots are so freaking hard to fill out because I guess it all depends on your philosophy when you're filling them out. I mean, and I'd be interested to know how you handle those things because I try to do it based on what I know. And what I know is that Sam Ehlinger and Brock Purdy are the two best returning quarterbacks in the Big 12. I have no idea. I think Spencer Rattler is going to be really good. All evidence suggests he's going to be really good and probably end up having a better career than those two guys just based on speculation. But we don't know that, you know? What do you think about
that? Yeah, I think for me, obviously I go with Sam as the incumbent, right? As the guy who started since his freshman year, the guy who's, you know, won three straight bowl games, you know, for his team, and a guy who's going to be a senior, a guy that will probably get drafted, not saying a high draft pick by any stretch of the imagination, but he would have had enough games under his belt as a four-year starter at Texas where, you know, saying a guy could be a day three pick is not, I don't think, you know, whoa, stretching it, you know, at that point. So you have a quarterback who, you know, the only question marks is he's got a new offensive coordinator. But if that OC is able to give him a little bit more, you know, whatever he needs in order to take, you know, the next step, because I think for me, it's for when it comes to Sam, it's about him being what we saw against LSU every single week. Right. I think that's his next step. I think that's his next progression is, all right, every week you got that guaranteed three touchdowns, four touchdowns within you, whether it's three passing and one rushing or it's two and two. But you just know at the end of the day, that's what you have and what you are. So for me, he would enter in, I think, as the number one guy based off a resume, based off achievements. And then I'd probably go Brock. And then Spencer, I think, like you said, he's more of a speculation, right? He's more of a, if you're investing in a stock and you say, okay, where can I buy low for a high return? Like, that's where I look at Spencer. You know, well, 2 years from now, is he in New York? I mean, probably. I mean, the way Lincoln goes. I mean, whatever Lincoln Riley's suite is in Times Square or whatever his hotel is that he gets the discounts for, I'm sure that will happen. But for right now, just entering the season, I would probably give the edge to Sam based off of his previous accomplishments because he's played.
Yeah. I'd love to see Lincoln Riley just 1 year say, I'm going to just go with a walk-on. I'm just going to see what – if I, I'm just going to see if I can do it with a walk-on. Now, I guess technically
Baker was a walk-on.
But right. Yeah. But, like, take the kid that they have from, like, you know, from the Texas Panhandle, Tanner Schaefer, who – you know, has never played really before, and he had a really nice high school career, walked on because he wants to be a coach. I want to see if you can make him into a Heisman candidate. I'm partly joking. I'm obviously joking, but like Spencer Rattler is so talented combined with Lincoln Riley's track record. It's just really hard to imagine that that's not going to go extremely well.
I would totally agree. So here's my question though. And I think we're projecting that Spencer will be very good based off of, first of all, his track record, second of all, with Lincoln's track record, right? But this season, and you talked about the tough schedule that Oklahoma has, and like Oklahoma's been a powerhouse in the Big 12. I know Texas fans don't like to hear it, but it just is what it is. Is this probably the most vulnerable year that Oklahoma has been or had in several years as far as the Big 12 is concerned, as far as the Big 12 is concerned?
Yeah, I mean, I think last year was interesting because, you know, last year they had so many offensive linemen to replace, and you had no idea what Alex Grinch's defense was going to look like. And they ended up playing pretty well on defense, really, until obviously the last game that everybody remembers. But, you know, last year I thought they were pretty vulnerable. I think I picked OU to win, but I really sort of in the back of my mind thought Texas was going to. I thought Texas had every opportunity early in the year to knock OU off that mantle. If it was going to happen, I felt like last year was a year it could happen. And then obviously Texas didn't have the year they thought they were going to have. And Baylor ended up being really good and coming really close twice to beating them. So they were pretty vulnerable last year. But this year, you know, with a new quarterback and questions in the running game and still questions about the defense. Look, just because they played better, just because they played better last year on defense, anything would have been better than what they were in 2018. Well, yeah,
it was bad. I mean,
they were historically bad in 2018, you know, with all of that fiasco. So they were better. And then, but I do wonder though, you know, OU fans may get mad at me for saying this, but I do wonder, like, is the fact that they were better on defense the result of them really being that much better? They were better, but being that much better? Or is it the result of the Big 12 just didn't have as good quarterbacks last year as they had in the past? I mean, you know, there was no Will Grier last year. You know, there was no now I'm going blank on some.
No, it's okay.
The quarterback play wasn't as elite as it has been in the past. So I wonder if some of it was that, because then when they did play an elite quarterback in the Peach Bowl, we all saw what happened. So, so I'm really interested in that, but I do think they're vulnerable this year. The question is, who is the team most primed to take them on? I probably think Texas, but Oklahoma State, with all they've got coming back, I think they can be really good. I'm really curious about Baylor. You know, if Matt Rhule had stayed, I might feel differently. But Baylor, to me, doesn't seem quite as much of a threat as they would have had Matt Rhule stuck around. So, I don't know. What do you think? Do you think they're vulnerable?
Do you buy any stock in TCU with them getting the 5-star?
That was big news today. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think you can never underestimate Gary Patterson.
Yeah.
And also, like, it's so hard to predict, I feel like, and maybe you disagree with this, but I feel like it's often hard to predict when TCU is going to have one of those years where they win 10 or 11 games. It always seems to just come out of nowhere. Yeah.
So. Yeah. You'll have it, like, you know, last year obviously was due to the quarterback, you know, they didn't have a good quarterback play. But yeah, there's just this one breakout year and you're like, holy crap. And then, maybe just like two good years and then just a fall off a cliff and they're back at 6 wins. Yeah. You know, interesting going into that, you know, I think that, while, you know, clearly with OU on top, I think there is a little bit of vulnerability, but I think it's naive to say, like, you know, in order to be the man, you have to beat the man. And I think it's just very easy to look at it and go down the roster and say, well, then we got this, then we get that, then we get that. Doesn't matter. Even when Oklahoma didn't have good defenses, they still were winning the Big 12. Even when they were historically bad, they still were winning the Big 12. You understand what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I look at Texas, and I say this is a team that, you know, had a coaching staff overhaul. I mean, you've had 7 new coaches on the staff. So we're basically talking about 70%. 7 out of 10, 70%, simple math. And so now Chris Ash, the defensive coordinator, you know, did great things at Ohio State. You got to like his resume. You mentioned Oklahoma State. They bring in Mike Yurcich, you know, a guy who learned under Gundy for years and learned how to get the most out of the least. That's kind of been the thing for Texas this offseason, is they wanted to find coaches who can develop talent. And so they feel like they were able to get that. Now, the flip side of it is there's no spring practice. You know, there's no, you know, so while they've been able to do certain things through the walkthrough process of the winter conditioning, you still didn't have full speed. You know, you still didn't have those things. So, you know, I think there's a lot of uncertainty. There's still, a lot of unknown. And again, this is going to be a team that's probably just going to be thrown in the fire like everybody else. And they're going to say, hey, you guys can start practice in mid-June, or you guys can come back at sometime in, July or mid-July or something to that effect and get ready for the season. And they'll have to try to see if they can hit the ground running. So, it's still, I think the betting odds came out today. What was like Oklahoma, maybe like 6-5, mm-hmm. something to that effect. I think Texas was like a 3-2 that came out. So it's still Oklahoma's show. But I think if there ever was a time for Texas to dethrone Oklahoma, it has to be the year when you've had a 4-year starter quarterback. I mean, you have to be able to say, hey, there's something you can show for at the end of the day. Like, you had a 4-year starter. He's going to, break a lot of records because he was able to start. So you're going to have that as Texas, but you've got to have something to show for at the end of the day.
Right. And that's why I think, like I said earlier, why I would vote Sam and Brock Purdy as the quarterbacks, because of track record. It's like, that is why I cannot pick Texas to win the Big 12 until they do it. Until Texas proves that they can do it, I can't pick them to win the Big 12. I'm curious what you think. I'm sorry, this is supposed to be you asking me.
No. I mean, I like it. Let's do it.
I want to know, is this a make or break year for Tom Herman? Does he have to win this year?
No. When he hired all his new assistants, they were given multi-year deals. Some of the coordinators, like Mr. Boulware, that they know from OU, and Yursich, they received 3-year deals. Now, Chris Ash didn't get a 3-year deal because he was working certain things with his buyout there and from Rutgers. So there was just whatever math needed to happen, that didn't happen. All the other assistants got two-year deals, multiple-year deals. So if you would have told me they all got 1-year deals, I would say make or break.
Yeah.
But when you start talking about multi-year deals and then adding up what it would take to get rid of those contracts, which would be a lot, now you're talking about, now add in a pandemic. We don't know what attendance is going to look like in the fall.
Right.
Let's assume all is well. Well, there's still going to be a certain amount of people that say, I'm not going to the games. So mm-hmm. you're probably going to have a little bit of a ticket loss at some point. And so they still would have the South End Zone project that they're raising money for. So now you're talking about that, $100 million project as far as zoning that thing in. And now you're trying to say, but now raise extra money to get rid of Tom Herman. I mean, that's just not going to happen. So it's not going to be a make or break year for him. It will just be, another year. And they're, hoping that this actually is the breakthrough year. But yeah. I mean, short of something just catastrophic.
2-10 or something. Yeah.
It had to be something catastrophic. And, that's not going to happen.
Right. Well, it's interesting. I love, at the very least, I love that OU in Texas is back to being, even if Texas hasn't quite gotten there on the field, I love that it's back to being this hated thing. Because I feel like for so long, and I don't know if you feel the same way, I felt for so long like it had started to get dull. Texas wasn't as good, and now with Tom Herman, they seem to have picked it back up, and they're winning these games. They're a threat. They have all this talent. They won the Sugar Bowl. I just feel like now it's a little bit more like what it should be. This game should be, there should be trash talking. We should have Brian Carrington getting on Twitter and talking trash. Like, I love it. I love every time he does that, because I think it's awesome that these two schools genuinely hate each other. That's the way it should be.
It is. And you know what? Look, let's just be honest. Like, I think from OU's fan perspective, Tom Herman is way easier to hate than Charlie Strong. Right.
That's true.
I mean, saying like, did you really hate Charlie Strong? I mean, or did you kind of feel bad for him at times? It's just like,
I felt bad for him.
Yeah. I don't think anybody really hated Charlie as from an OU perspective. And even though he won that one game and they're hoisting him up and it was like, he's at the ET finger and all these other type of things. Like, at the end of the day, I still won 5 games in the year. So he just kind of took it as it was. But this one's different because, you know, again, you have more visible guys. I mean, you have a guy like Baker Mayfield who calls out a guy like Sam Ehlinger, just random, like you're in the pros and you're going after him. There's the Brian Carrington factor and, you know, his appeal to his little shushes and that everyone doesn't like. And, you know, there's probably a gif. How many gifs of Tom Herman are there out there on the internet? 7, 8, I don't even know. And so, yeah, but it does help that. And from a competitive standpoint, hey, 2 years ago, Sam Ehlinger outplayed Kyler Murray. I mean, just it happened. And when Kyler blinked, and it was like they were going back and forth, and Kyler had that fumble, that was kind of like that moment, right? It was, yeah. They proceeded on. So you go into the game, you know, and you say, like, hey, this might be the first time that OU fans have gone into this game saying, man, they've got the better quarterback, actually.
Yeah.
And we don't like them.
Yeah.
And so I think it is good. And wait to the reaction that we get off of this. I'm sure that there'll be hatred on both sides for both of us, and it'll be great.
Oh, yeah. Look, I love the horns down stuff. I love all of this.
You think there should be a penalty for that? Think there should be a penalty for that?
I don't.
You know what's funny? Texas fans actually hate that other teams get penalized for that.
Really? I didn't know that.
Absolutely hate it. They think that the Big 12 is overstepping their boundaries. They actually do not care about it. The majority, I'm on our message board all the time, the overwhelming majority think it's weak sauce when that happens.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of stuff just is, I think it's so much fun. It's all part of the game. And it's been going on. I've been, you know, I grew up in the Norman area, so I've been going to OU games and following OU my whole life. Like, the horns down is just something that exists. Now, I think, you know, it's perfectly reasonable to ask, why can't you come up with your own hand signal? Why do you just got to turn those upside down? But yes, that's also kind of part of it. That's what makes it so fun and so petty.
Well, yes.
What are sports without pettiness? Jeez, we're watching this Last Dance. I'm sure you're watching it too. the level of pettiness is just, it nourishes me. I love it. I love it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, in Texas fans watching the horse-drawn buggy thingy flip over.
That was one of those moments that when it happened, it was like, did that really just happen? Like, and you could sort of see it, like, ooh.
And I just knew instant gif. Everyone's okay. Instant gif.
Well, and man, when OU was losing that game to Baylor in Waco last year, getting blown out, looked like they were just going to get their doors blown off. They played that video on the Jumbotron at Baylor Stadium, and that's about when OU's comeback started. So, when they played that, I was like, oh my God, I've never seen that kind of just disrespect from a Jumbotron. Like, oh my goodness. You know, that's the sort of thing I could see, you know, Texas doing to OU if they played in Austin. You know, Baylor, like, that just seemed like, oh my God, can't believe they did that. And they probably wish they hadn't.
But what'll be interesting, and I do have a question for you, it's going to be interesting this year if social distancing is the thing that we're going to have to do going forward. A Texas OU game in the Cotton Bowl, I mean, that's almost – that's impossible, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, man, I'm going to be so sad if that's affected, because the OU-Texas game is the greatest thing. I love it every year. I look forward to it every year. It's so much fun. I hope they never move it from the Cotton Bowl and from State Fair weekend. And, I could tolerate 1 year if it's because of social distancing and because of the – I could tolerate that. But moving forward, if they ever move it – my theory is renovate the stadium. Do anything you have to do to keep it in that stadium on that weekend. I do not want to see it go to Jerry World or to the campuses.
No. But what we're going to need is – so it's almost going, we're going to need like dummies to fill in the spaces or something like that. You know, we're wearing like Texas or OU stuff, so it still has that same crowded feel on the 50-yard line. Okay, let me ask you this.
Whoa, you all right?
Yeah, I knocked down my stuff behind me. I did it again.
Did anything break? Are you good?
Lean back too far, but I'm okay. I'm okay.
All right.
Tell me your overall prediction. As far as what you think is going to happen in the football season, like, What do you foresee happening? You see this thing getting started as usual, social distancing being the norm. Like, what's kind of been the gauge? I know that OU, you know, announced they had planned to have on-campus learning. I think just about every school in the Big 12 has planned on that. So what's your just general overall belief?
Yeah, and I don't really know what to make of that because, you know, I think there's always a motive behind those sorts of announcements. And I feel like these presidents are announcing that, and they all put in the little caveat, things could change. And I think they're doing that because they don't want everybody to just go enroll in a community college. They want, you know, sure. What I mean? And because, I mean, look, if I was 18 years old and, you know, maybe going to a place like Texas or Oklahoma and paying that tuition was going to be hard. If I'm not going to get to go there, why not just enroll at a community college and get the same credit? So I think that's part of what they're trying to avoid. The other thing is, I don't know about you. I'm just like, I'm kind of tired of the prognosticating because nobody knows. Literally, nobody knows. And it's like, if, you know, one day you have the Arkansas AD coming out and saying, we're planning on having football, and then he has to walk that back. And you've got Bob Bowlsby saying one thing, and then Mark Emmert at the NCAA saying something a little bit different. And I just can't figure out why these people can't get, you know, can't get on Zoom like me and you are right now mm-hmm. and figure out a plan and be on the same page. Because it seems like, and I guess that's part of the problem with college athletics. Every conference is different. Every conference has its own rules. There's really nobody in charge. And so, you know, at least in the NBA,
NCAA should technically be in charge. They just choose not to be. They should be.
Correct. Yeah. And, but you know, the NBA, the NFL, there's a commissioner. There are, you know, everybody's under the same umbrella, and it's just, college is so weird that, you know, you hear this stuff about what happens if, you know, the Pac-12 schools, because they're California and Oregon, don't decide not to play. I mean, can the rest of the country play without the Pac-12 playing? I guess they could, but wouldn't that basically be a death penalty for the Pac-12 schools? Because everybody's going to transfer. Everybody's going to want to leave. Those schools are going to never recover. Will USC ever recover from that? Or will they be like SMU when they had the death penalty? I mean, that's what I think is scary about it. And so I'm trying to be optimistic. I don't know what's going to happen, but my sort of optimism tells me there will be a season in some form, even if there aren't fans. And I really hope there are, because college football is not college football without the fans. But if it can happen in some form, even without fans, I would be all for it. And I'm sort of maintaining my optimism. But again, with the caveat that I have no idea.
Sure. I think for me, not having fans doesn't seem reasonable, because college athletics, unlike the NFL, makes the majority of their money through the ticket sales, and the revenue, the sponsorships, like all those type of things. And so without that the ticket portion, it doesn't even make any sense to bring in a non-conference opponent, pay that opponent $1 million, but you don't really have any gate revenue. You know, you're taking the gate loss, plus you're paying out. So you almost, at that point, if there's no fans, I don't even think you have a non-conference schedule. I think you have to at least go straight into conference schedule so you don't have that major loss. But I think they have to have that. To what degree, I don't know, to your point, but what degree, I don't know. But the lack of without the machine of college football funding every other sport, you take that loss. Now, all of a sudden, every sport becomes optional. Your lacrosse becomes optional. Your golf becomes optional. Tennis becomes optional, like across the board. And that, you know, that'll hurt the big schools like a Texas and an OU. And I just start thinking about the smaller schools, like the smaller programs, you know, was it UAB just, you know, a few years ago on a good day, got rid of football and then had to bring it back, you know? So what happens to your Florida Internationals or your Texas States or, you know, all these other programs, especially these programs that have to go and get the payday? They got to go take an ass whooping from Alabama, take an ass whooping from Oklahoma, take an ass whooping from Texas to get paid. What happens when those guys don't have a football, you know, to fund their department? You know, so that's why I think at some way, by hook or crook, they will find some way to make it happen.
Well, yeah, and then you start thinking about I mean, I'm sure there are, you know, funnily enough, Texas is the one stadium I've never been to in the Big 12. Obviously, I've never had a reason to go there. Yeah, so
never been to OU.
Never been to OU. We'll come up sometime and we'll hang out. But I think about the bars, the Mott and O'Connell's, and you know the bars and restaurants in the area of the stadium. You know, mm-hmm. you can if you play football without fans, those bars are going to go out of business.
Yeah,
because game days are when they make most of their money. And so those you take away those 6, 7, whatever Saturdays in a year, and that decimates those businesses. And I have a feeling it would be exactly the same way at a lot of popular bars in Austin.
Yeah. I mean, there's tons of those things where you're thinking about the hotels that, you know, plan on having that there. And, I think the trickle down effect is it's just too much. So, I don't know what the final solution will be, but it's just very hard for me today to imagine money with the money portion of it. And again, you brought up a good thing. I wrote something about this a few weeks ago, but even from like an academic standpoint, you talked about if you're a parent, you know, all right, well, if all things are equal and it's just online classes, I'll just send my kid to a junior college. There's also kids may say, hey, we may just do a gap year and just take a year off. You know, there's also that portion. There's also a lot of schools that are lifting their ACT and ACT requirements. So you might have a better chance to get into an Ivy League school now than maybe you did before. So maybe try to see if you can do that. You know, there's so many ways. And then of course the dorms themselves, look at all the money that they lose by not being that, not having that extra millions of not having that extra fees and paying into food. And like the trickle down effect is, you know, from students to the athletic department would be a crushing blow for all athletics. So let's keep our fingers crossed and hope for the best. How about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And one last thing about that. I actually did an interview with OU softball coach Patty Gasso a few weeks ago. And, OU softball has this great program. They've won all these national titles. She is one of the best coaches on campus, if not the best coach on campus. And she said, we need football. I want football to be played. Even if it's in the spring at the same time as our program plays, I want football to be played. She said, because we need football. And she's right. And all those programs that otherwise lose money at Texas and Oklahoma and Oklahoma State and everywhere else, they need football to be played. And like you said, preferably with fans in the stands, because that's a big revenue source.
Yeah. Jason, I've enjoyed myself.
Me too.
Hopefully we can do this again. I felt like this was a good, civil, some would say intelligent, conversation that was had today, man. And I had a really great time. I would appreciate your insights.
Well, you know, it was intelligent on your side. On my side, I did the best I could. On your side, it was intelligent. Look at this. Look at this peace. There can be peace between the two sides.
It'll never be. But you and I can be cool.
Yeah.
You and I can be cool. You and I can plan to hang out in Dallas at some point, hopefully later on this year. But what else? You got anything else? Any other things in the fire? How can people follow you? Just tell us the Athletic. I mean, anything. Do some self-promotion.
Well, thank you. Yeah, no, I'm on Twitter at Jason Kersey. You can follow me. You know, if I ever say anything snarky about Texas, it's usually just in jest. So, you know, you can safely follow me. I'm not going to be too mean. Because really, I don't care who wins at the end of the day.
Sure.
But I do like to have fun sometimes. The Athletic, right now you can sign up 90 days for free. We're doing a deal, where you can get 90 days for free, a free trial because of the pandemic. And I really hope people will go check it out. We're really proud of the work we do. And I hope that you're taking care of my boy Kalen Jones down there.
Yes. I definitely take care of Kalen. By the way, just so you guys know, there is a Texas site on the Athletic. So don't feel like you got to sign up and just read all you stuff. There is a Texas site Kalen does cover. I do know Kalen well. And
trying to be careful there. Like, do I promote Kalen on your podcast? You know, so like I'm trying to be respectful here.
This is my podcast. I do whatever the hell I want. I have a whole you guy on my podcast. I'm like, this is my podcast.
I promote
who? I had Brian Davis from Austin American Statesman on a few weeks ago. I got you on. Like, I've got no beef with people. So I've been the reporters themselves. So I've got no beef. I promote, man. Everybody can eat. So, yeah, sign up for that. 90 days. That's not a bad deal. And again, could read your work and on there and read what's going on with Texas. All right, let's wrap it up. Jason, thank you so much, man. I do appreciate it. I'll tweet this thing out. Make sure you put a really nice hashtag. You know, love with Tiger King. Carol did it.
I mean, horns up for peace. Horns up for peace.
and I can't even go any further. On that note, you guys take care. I appreciate you guys listening. Always remember what I say, live each day like it was your last, because one day it will be, and we'll talk soon.